Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Yo, step into the ring where the stories get raw. Junkyard James spitting truth, no flaw. Beyond the junkyard, the tales collide. Wrestling's wild side, come and take the ride. Chairs fly, ropes snap, legends unfold. Every move, every slam, the drama is gold. From the underground brawls to the title fights, we break it all down under spotlight nights. Beyond the junkyard, where the stories get told. Steel cages, bright lights, the moment's so bold. From the past to the future, the mats stay strong. Junkyard James, keep it real all day long. Tune in, strap up, it's about to get wild. Powerbomb the truth, no sugar, no mild. Every heel, every face, every match that burns. The junkyard delivers, now it's your turn. So hit play, no delay, the bell has rung. Beyond the junkyard, where the legends are sung. Junkyard James got the mic in his grip. Wrestling podcast vibes, now let's take the truth.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome to Solo Saturday here on the Beyond the Junkyard podcast. I am your host, Junkyard James, and it is a wonderful Saturday. We are a week out from AEW All In and moving closer to Forbidden Door. Obviously, this weekend we got TNA's pay-per-view Slammiversary. Coming up, AJ Styles making an appearance. Might have to check that out. I haven't watched TNA and since Tessa Blanchard was men's world champion, but we might have to check that out. I appreciate everybody for tuning in and listening to this episode. We got to give a huge shout out to all of our subscribers. Remember to hit that subscribe button. We're on a run, on a race to get to 100 subscribers by the end of the year. And we're slowing down on the pace that we were running, trying to get some more subscribers here, which leads me to tell you the four things that I need you to do. I need you to hit that like button. I need you to comment. I need you to share this. I need you to subscribe and hit that notification bell if you're on YouTube. And then if you're listening to on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or any of the other podcasting formats, I need you to hit that subscribe button. Leave a 5-star review. And let everybody know that this is the best damn wrestling podcast in the game. All right, what are we talking about today? So I got a bit of a packed episode. We're gonna talk first about what I'm calling the de-evolution of WWE. We'll transition that into our Smash Your Pass segment, and then we'll end the show talking about some of the biggest stories in the news the last couple of days in the wrestling world. We got to give a huge shout out to all of our sponsors. It's WWE Shop. You can pick up, you see that NXT title in the background there. You can pick up that title or other merchandise at WWE Shop. Use the link in the description. The huge thanks to W.GG. You can go to that website, W.GG. Use the code Beyond the Yard, and you can get 10% off of your order and help support the podcast. And then other links for StubHub and RSS.com, our other sponsors, are also in the description box below. Let's get out of this housekeeping mode. Let's start talking about some content. But first, there's all this new attitude that I have, right? I said it last Thursday on the live stream the other day. I'm done coddling these WWE fans, right? Like, you can watch WWE all you want, but like, sit here and telling me that your product is better than AEW, and I'm going to laugh in your motherfucking face, right? I'm going to laugh, and I know I'm going to get haters for that, right? I know I'm going to get some haters. And so for the haters, I got a word for you. Listen in. All right, let's get serious here. I want to talk a little bit about the de-evolution of WWE. And so let's start there, right? Like, imagine the wrestlers that you grew up watching in the late 90s, early 2000s, like Mr. Latino Heat here, right? Eddie Guerrero. Like, imagine the Attitude Era was there. We entered into the Ruthless Aggression Era. Those were the days when WWE, which was at that time called WWF, was not just some entertainment show on Mondays or Friday nights. It was a cultural juggernaut. Everybody knew what pro wrestling was back in this day and age. Monday Night Raw wasn't just a show, it was a fucking event. You had names like Eddie Guerrero, Kurt Angle, Chris Jericho, Chris Benoit, and many others who weren't just wrestlers, but like cultural icons. These guys were the heartbeat of pro wrestling. They were the ones that made us believe in the art, athleticism, and storytelling. They were the larger-than-life characters, but I'm going to tell you something today that you may not believe, but I'm telling you it's the truth. Those people, Eddie Guerrero, Kurt Angle, Chris Benoit, Chris Jericho, the icons of the past, if they stepped in as 20-somes to the Performance Center today, they wouldn't even get an opportunity to wrestle on NXT Level Up. They wouldn't get an opportunity to wrestle on LFG. They wouldn't get an opportunity to wrestle on Evolve because of the de-evolution of the landscape of what WWE is today. They wouldn't get that chance to shine because of this corporate, polished production that WWE has today. The style has changed, the game has changed, the system has changed. So let's break it down. Like, picture this, 1999, maybe it's 2001, you're watching SmackDown, Eddie Guerrero's in the ring, moving like a panther. He's hitting a frog splash, the crowd is losing their mind. Or maybe we push forward to like 2003, 2004, Kurt Angle's in the ring, he's an Olympic gold medalist. He's suplexing dudes into the next week and somehow making you laugh with his nerdy, arrogant, charismatic shtick. Chris Jericho may be cutting a promo that is so sharp it could slice through the steel. And Chris Benoit, you know, he's the technician of all technicians. He's chain wrestling masterpieces that make you forget wrestling is scripted. These guys weren't just good. They were revolutionary. They brought something new to the table, something raw, something real. But they'd be walking unknowns in the Performance Center today. They'd be lucky to get a dark match on NXT on a house show, because the WWE of 2005 isn't looking for what they brought to the game. They're looking for something else entirely new. And so what's the biggest change? I think it's the look, right? Back in the day, yes, WWE loved their larger-than-life characters, but they sometimes gave a shot to the cruiserweights, the smaller guys, the people like Eddie Guerrero and Chris Jericho and Chris Benoit, who maybe weren't the biggest guys. They were 5'8", 5'10", maybe 220 pounds, you know, soaking wet. They weren't bodybuilders. They were wrestlers, and they didn't have that chiseled Instagram model physique that WWE promotes today. Like, today's roster is filled with guys that look like they'd walked out of a fitness magazine. Bron Breakker. I mean, even Dominic Mysterio looks like a playboy. Someone like Cody Rhodes, they've got this polished, marketable look. And you look at the female wrestlers, they look like they just, you know, they walked out of Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition straight into your television. Right? But what about Eddie Guerrero? He didn't fit that image. He was stocky. He was a little rough around the edges. He had a mullet that screamed, "I'm here to fight, not pose." And if he walked in for a contract, a tryout today for WWE, they'd tell him to hit the gym and come back with a six-pack. Isn't that what they said to Adam Cole? "Oh, he's too small. He's too skinny. I can't believe he can win the championship." Right. So this is what I'm saying, is this is why I feel the people like Guerrero and Jericho, Jericho in his beginning, right, in his prime in the early 2000s, wouldn't get an opportunity today because they didn't have that look, or they don't have that look today. They don't have a TikTok following today. They're not big on social media today. They don't have a market. Like, they're not marketable people in today's society. But it's not just about the physical appearance. It's the style of wrestling. The late 90s and the early 2000s were a melting pot of different wrestling styles. Eddie Guerrero was bringing in some Lucha Libre flair. He was high-flying. He was fast-paced. Kurt Angle brought in that, like, amateur wrestling background, ground and pound, technical precision. He popped the crowd with the occasional out-of-nowhere moonsault. Chris Jericho, he brought that, like, rock and roll showmanship. He was athletic but also charismatic. And Chris Benoit, he was, like, the technician's technician. Every match with Chris Benoit felt like it was a shoot. These guys were versatile. They could brawl, they could fly, they could grapple, they could tell a story. But in today's WWE in-ring style, this homogenized WWE formula, signature moves, high spots, crowd-pleasing moments, yeeting for 45 minutes on the TV, these guys wouldn't fit today's style. Like, don't sit here and think that Eddie Guerrero would fit in WWE. Now, what I'm not saying is Eddie Guerrero wouldn't get over. No, he would totally get over, because at the end of the day, the fans like the in-ring work. Eddie Guerrero was so good in the ring. Chris Jericho is really good in the ring. He slowed down now that he's in his, you know, past his prime, but he's so good in the ring, and he's also very charismatic and can really play a character really well. Chris Benoit, so good in the ring. Kurt Angle, so good in the ring. Those were my favorites growing up because of the in-ring. And it's like, you look at who my favorite was, my favorites were growing up. Like, I wasn't the biggest Undertaker fan. I wasn't the biggest Rock fan, to be completely honest, or Stone Cold fan, to be completely honest. I liked Eddie Guerrero and Kurt Angle and John Cena because when I was growing up, those were the guys that were in the ring fighting their ass off, doing good stuff in the ring. And Cena was a little bit of a mixture of the character with the in-ring. And I like a good character. Don't tell me, don't shoot me wrong here. Don't take words out of context. But like, I wasn't the biggest Undertaker fan, because the aura of Undertaker was that he was like a mysterious wizard, right? Like, but Undertaker didn't give you a 5-star match. That's not his point, and that's why I wasn't his biggest fan. But Eddie Guerrero, Kurt Angle, you know, fuck Dave Meltzer. He didn't give Kurt Angle a 5-star match ever. Kurt Angle was one of the best wrestlers of all time, right? Like, he's one of my favorites. There's a reason he had a Hall of Fame level career in WWE and a Hall of Fame level career in TNA, two different companies. And so it's just a wild that he never got a 5-star match. That's another episode for another day. But like, today, these people wouldn't get a chance, right? Guys like Chris Jericho and Eddie Guerrero were untouchable with their charisma and their promos. Jericho could walk out, grab a mic, and have 20,000 people eating out of his hands in 30 seconds. He didn't need a script. Like, as a rock star, he was a natural. And see, Eddie Guerrero had that soul, that fire, that lie, cheat, and steal swagger that made you believe every word he said. Today's promo style, though, is different. It's overly produced, overly scripted. They're handed pages of dialogue written by Hollywood rejects, and they're expected to recite it verbatim. Like, let's look at someone like LA Knight, though. Like, he's a throwback. He can talk. He even had, you know, but even he's had to fight tooth and nail to get time on the mic. Like, picture this. TNA. Eli Drake comes out. Like, I loved Eli Drake in TNA. That's LA Knight, by the way. He was awesome. He had that really good charisma and swagger and all of the gimmick that he has, right? The dummy. Like, all of that stuff he created in TNA, and yet he's struggling to get time on the mic to prove what he can do. He's not given that chance in WWE, right? Like, if Jericho were starting out today, they'd hand him a script and tell him to stick to his lines, and he'd be miserable. Eddie, with his heartfelt, authentic promos about his past struggles and his family, like, they'd probably tell him it's too real. Like, it's too raw. It's not family friendly enough for this PG era. And then, like, let's not talk about character development. The WWE of the early 2000s gave guys room to grow, to experiment, to fail. Kurt Angle started off as some goofy heel who thought he was a hero. Like, nobody saw him becoming the greatest, one of the greatest of all time. But WWE let him figure it out. Eddie Guerrero went from a mid-card tag team guy to a world championship because he gave them time to connect with the audience. But see, today, WWE's creative process is like an assembly line. And if you don't pop the crowd immediately, you're relegated to the main event, or even worse, maybe even released. Look at how many NXT call-ups get lost in the shuffle. Guys and girls whose talent never gets the chance to develop because WWE is too busy trying to push the next big thing. Think of people like Carmelo Hayes. Think of people like the Creed brothers. Think of people like Karrion Kross. Big in NXT. Showed they had what it takes to be big in WWE. They get called up, thrown aside because they don't let these guys develop their characters. Oh man, Carmelo Hayes, he didn't connect with the main roster. So we'll just throw him to the lower mid card, and he'll tag team with the Miz, and he'll take a bunch of losses, and he'll just never get a title shot ever again. He was the biggest thing in NXT. His feud with him and Trick was like the best thing in WWE at that time. Like, I enjoyed that. I enjoyed Trick versus Carmelo Hayes. Where's Carmelo Hayes now? Right? Think of all these women that get called up, thrown aside. You know, the Chris Benoit, quiet and intense, he would have been labeled boring by today's metrics. He'd be stuck in catering, watching dark matches, while someone with a flashier look, a Jey Uso, gets TV time. But see, now there was this thing back in the early 2000s called the indie wrestling pipeline, right? Well, now there's a lack of a pipeline to WWE. See, back in the days, guys like Eddie Guerrero, Chris Jericho, Chris Benoit, they came up through the independent scene. Places like ECW, WCW, or even New Japan. They honed their craft in front of smaller crowds, learned how to work the different styles, and built a reputation before WWE called their name, right? That's how you got like teams like the Radicals, four guys who walked into the WWF in 2000 and changed the game overnight. But today, WWE doesn't scout the indies like they used to, unless they work for AEW, of course, right? And then they come calling right away. They've got their performance center, their own little bubble, where they can mold wrestlers from scratch. If you're not a homegrown talent or some big name free agent like Cody Rhodes was, Mariah May was, Ricky Starks was, good luck getting noticed. I mean, let's even back up. Mariah May, Jade Cargill, they had WWE tryouts prior to their AEW run. But it was because of them being able to craft their talent in other companies that WWE came calling. Right, Kurt Angle, an Olympic athlete, may never get a chance because of his credentials. May get a chance because of his credentials. Like think of Gable Steveson. That didn't work out because Gable Steveson sucked in the ring, quite to be honest. But like Kurt Angle, he might have gotten an opportunity because he was an amateur wrestler. But someone like Eddie Guerrero and Chris Jericho, who were grinding it out in the bingo halls, like, they'd be invisible to WWE's radar. There are wrestlers on indie scenes throughout the South and every other place in the United States. Wrestlers who I think, you know, they've been wrestling for 15 years on the indies, and they haven't been even looked at by WWE. Like, I'll tell you an example. You know who Larry Zbyszko is? Like, he was a WWE legend, Larry Zbyszko. His son, Timothy Zbyszko, wrestles in my area in these indie scenes. You would have thought name recognition, right, would have gotten him an opportunity, and they haven't looked at him. At least to my knowledge, they haven't looked at him. That's wild. And he's actually a really good wrestler. He's a really good character. I've watched him several times in the indie scene. Just nothing. Because WWE has de-evolved from the indie wrestling pipeline to finding people that have crafted their talent on the indie scene to wanting to craft their own Frankenstein monster. And then let's talk about risk tolerance and today's super ultra HR corporate world of WWE. These guys wouldn't have been able to make it. In the early 2000s, WWE was willing to take chances on guys. They let Eddie Guerrero, who was a known recovering addict with a checkered past, become the face of SmackDown. They let Kurt Angle, a guy with no pro wrestling experience, main event pay-per-views within a year of his debut. They let Chris Jericho reinvent himself over and over and over again, like from Y2J to the list. To the pain maker, like all of these things that he created over time, they allowed those risks to be made. Today, WWE plays it very safe. As a publicly traded company, they have to answer to their shareholders, to their sponsors, to their advertisers. They want wrestlers who fit that brand and don't rock the boat. Like the edginess of Eddie Guerrero, the intensity of Chris Benoit, and even Kurt Angle's willingness to look like a complete dork, it wouldn't fit in this polished, predictable age of WWE. Like, they'd be seen as liabilities and not assets. No, I know what some of you are thinking, but what about NXT? Isn't that where WWE develops talent? Sure, NXT may be great for building stars, but even NXT has changed. It's not that gritty indie flavored show it was 10 years ago. By the way, the gritty indie flavored show that brought me back to pro wrestling 10 years ago. It's now just a feeder system to the main roster. It's designed to churn out wrestlers who fit WWE's mold. Look at the NXT roster today. Obafemi, Trick Williams. Yeah, they're talented, no doubt, but they're being groomed to fit a specific archetype. If you don't check those boxes, you're never getting called up. Someone like Chris Benoit, who wasn't super flashy, but a really good technician in the ring, he would probably languish in NXT for years, being labeled as not ready for Raw or SmackDown. And then let's not ignore probably a big issue, the PG era. The WWE of 2025 is still PG, still family friendly, still careful not to offend. The attitude in Ruthless Aggression era, they were anything but. Eddie Guerrero's lie, cheat, and steal gimmick, probably too edgy for today's WWE. Jericho's insults, calling people ass clowns and all of that other stuff he said, like they'd be censored before he could even finish the sentence. And listen, AEW's gone censoring content recently too, so WWE is not the only company doing it. But Benoit's no-nonsense, hard-hitting style, it'd be toned down to avoid looking too violent. You know, his flying headbutt probably is, I think, a banned move right now. The WWE of today wants larger-than-life characters who can sell toys and appeal to kids. Kurt Angle's intensity, his ability to blur the line between sport and entertainment, would be softened to fit the brand. These guys thrived in an era where wrestling could be raw, real, and a little dangerous. But now, well, that era's gone. And the biggest factor, social media marketability. WWE just doesn't want wrestlers. They want influencers. They want people who can trend on X, rack up views on YouTube, and sell merch with a catchy catchphrase. Four words. Uh-huh. One word. Four letters. Uh-huh. Yeet. That's WWE nowadays. Look at someone like Logan Paul. He's not a wrestler by trade, but he's a star because he was a social media juggernaut prior to WWE. Jericho's charisma, it translates to social media, but would WWE give him time to build that following if he was just starting out today? I'm doubtful. Eddie Guerrero with his soulful promos and underdog story, he wouldn't be seen as marketable as that guy with a million followers doing backflips. Chris Benoit, who barely spoke outside of the ring. Like, forget it. He'd be invisible in the age of social media. And then let's talk about diversity of style. The WWE of early 2000s was a melting pot. You had big men like The Undertaker, technical wizards like Benoit, high flyers like Rey Mysterio, brawlers like Stone Cold, and showmen like Jericho. Today's roster feels more uniform. Everyone's expected to wrestle the same way, cut the same kind of promo, fit the same mold. There's less room for the outliers, for the guys who don't fit this template to bring something unique. Like Eddie's Lucha Libre, Angle's amateur background, Jericho's rock star vibe, they'd all be forced to conform, to water down what made them special, and that's assuming if they even got a contract. Now listen, I kind of am, but I don't want you to think it's sounding like I'm trashing modern WWE. Like, it's a different beast, and it's successful in its own way. And they're making money hand over fist. They're filling somewhat arenas. They're pushing stars like Roman Reigns, Cody Rhodes, and Rhea Ripley. But the system that produces those stars is rigid. It's not built for Eddie Guerrero. It's not built for the guys who need time to grow, who don't fit the mold, who bring something different. It's not built for the Kurt Angles, who come from outside of the wrestling bubble and need a chance to prove themselves. It's not built for the Chris Jerichos, who thrive on creative freedom and spontaneity. And it's definitely not built for the Chris Benoits, who let their work in the ring speak louder than any promo they could ever produce. So what would happen to these guys today? Eddie would probably grind it out on the indies, hoping for a viral moment to get noticed. he'll probably be a CMLL guy or an AEW guy. Angle would probably get a tryout because of his Olympic pedigree. He'd be stuck in developmental, learning that WWE way instead of being let loose. Jericho might make it as a heel, but he'd be fighting against a script that stifles creativity. And meanwhile, he'd probably be told he's too intense, too serious, too old school for the modern audience. They'd all be fighting an uphill battle against a system that prioritizes polished over passion and marketability over authenticity. The tragedy is these guys changed wrestling. They pushed the boundaries. They raised the bar. They made WWE what it is today. For me as a fan, they made WWE what it was. But the WWE of 2025, it's a well-oiled machine, a corporate machine that doesn't take risk on the underdog, on the outlier, on that diamond in the rough. It wants safe bets, not revolutionaries. And that's why, as much as it pains me to say, the Eddie Guerreros, the Kurt Angles, the Chris Jerichos, the Chris Benoits, they wouldn't get the same shot today. They'd be told to change, to conform, to fit the mold. And wrestling, my friends, would be poorer for it. So let's raise a glass to those legends, to that era that let them have that opportunity to shine. Let's remember what made them great. Not just the moves, their promos, or their matches, but their ability to break through in a world that wasn't always ready for them. And let's hope somewhere down the line, wrestling finds a way to let those kinds of stars shine again. Because without them, we're just watching a show. But with them, we're watching magic. And by the way, that place that lets them shine, well, that's AEW, All Elite Wrestling. Anyways, let me know what you guys think in the comment section below. Am I telling the truth, or do you think I'm wrong? I don't know. Let's transition into Baddie of the Week, Smash or Pass. It's been a couple weeks since we've done this, so let's retell y'all the rules. Join the Discord, and the link's in the description. Submissions are sent to the Baddies channel and the Discord server. Look for recent photos, not super old photos, and we're just going to rank them, smash or pass. Listen, it's been about 2 weeks worth of submissions being brought in, so not every submission is going to get an opportunity to shine. This week, I didn't want this to take forever. So I cut it down to, I cut a few of them out. And so don't get pissed off at me if one of your submissions didn't make the cut. It's just there were so many of them. I didn't want this to take forever because I knew that opening monologue was going to take quite some time. All right, here we go. Let's start it off with Dakota Kai. And I don't really like this photo. I think Dakota Kai is an attractive woman, but this photo looks a little isn't her best work, in my opinion. So I'm gonna have to pass on her. And I'm gonna tell you, the offense today is a little pass heavy. I'll just go ahead and tell you that. Like, not the submissions the last couple weeks were kind of iffy, in my honest opinion. So I'm gonna pass on this photo of Dakota Kai. Maybe it's just the photo. Maybe it's the, I don't know, angle or the lighting. I don't know. But it's a pass for me, dog. And then Jade Cargill. Listen, it's always a pass. And I told you why. Like Jade's an attractive woman, but just not my type. And that's okay. You can like her. I don't like her. Like, she's attractive, but she's not my type. So it's a pass on Jade Cargill. Like I said, it's pass heavy offense this week. We continue with Stephanie Vaquer. I don't see the hype behind her, to be completely honest. Like, again, she's cute, but this isn't a game of is she cute? It's smash or pass, and it's It's a pass for me, dog. All right, we get to Billy Starks. Finally, we get something. This is a smash. Billy Starks is a cute. She's attractive. I like Billy Starks a lot. And yeah, smash on Miss Billy Starks. Fallon Henley gets a smash. I think she's one of the better NXT women in terms of the looks department. So yeah, Fallon Henley, smash. But the better looking one in NXT, I don't know. Is she in the main roster? I don't really pay attention to WWE that much. Kalani Jordan, double smash. yeah, Kalani Jordan is awesome in the looks department and in the ring. I like her in the ring. So anyways, Blake Monroe. I think this is an older photo, but I had to put it in because in the Discord, Wavy D put to the guy who submitted this one. He said, it's about time you started cooking, throwing some heat. And yeah, this is a good photo. Double smash on Blake Monroe, even though you left AEW and I don't know what's going on with you in NXT. So anyways, Nixon Newell, a.k.a. Tegan Knox. Double smash. I think she looks good. There's something authentic with this photo. There's something like real. Again, it's not super polished. So, and I kind of like that. So, Steph DeLander, double smash. Yeah, you know how I feel about Steph. Anyways, Julia Hart, like now we're cooking with some steam here, folks. Double smash with Miss Julia Hart. By the way, her entering work with her and Tekla and Sky Blue is going to be a masterpiece of a stable. So I can't wait to watch that grow. I think they're going to be called the Sisters of Sin, or the Sin Sister, something like that. Oh, it's going to be a wonderful thing. So anyways, Julia Hart, double smash. Big Shoddy got a good one, I'll tell you that. Lee Johnson. All right, Tatum Paxley, I'll give her a smash. I like her. Not a double-double, but a smash on this time for Miss Tatum Paxley. Tiffany Nieves, double smash. She was putting out some bangers on social media this week. Whoever she hooked up to get this photo shoot with did a really good job because muy bueno. Latino heat. All right, let's keep going. Casey Fox, she's attractive, but I don't know who she is. I guess she's an indie wrestler, but I like her. I'll give her a smash. And that's what we got for baddies of the week. Quick this week. I don't want this segment to take super long. Yeah, let me know what you guys think. Comment below, go through the list. You can do your smash or pass yourself in the comments below. Let's end the show here. I don't want to make this segment super, or this show super long this week. Saturday shows, I try to keep under an hour if possible. But let's talk about, I got three big stories that have shown up in the news here recently. And let's talk about them. The first one is Will Ospreay was written off of TV last Saturday at All In. He was already kind of written to take some time off. He had an injury, and the fear now is that Will Ospreay's injury may be more serious than it was believed to be prior to him being out. So on the latest edition of Wrestling Observer Newsletter, Dave Meltzer reported Ospreay, who has been, quote, hurting for a while, he's taking time off after his injuries became worse than he thought. There's currently no timetable for his return, and he's scheduled to be fully checked out by a doctor in the U.S. next week. So my hope is it's nothing super serious that'll require him to have surgery or whatnot. And make him miss quite a bit of time. I think the plan with Ospreay is obviously August 30th, the return of All in Wembley Stadium. Will Ospreay will come out as champion. I think that has to be the goal. The issue here is if he has to be out for months and he has to get surgery of some point, can Will Ospreay reasonably be back in time for that show? Or will they have to change direction for Ospreay getting that AEW world title? So I hope the injuries aren't anything serious. I'm not quite sure what the injury is, so hopefully we'll hear more as he gets checked out. They did know that his absence was already previously planned as a focal point for Forbidden Door is now in doubt. The victory along Swerve Strickland against the Young Bucks now positions Strickland for a solo run for the AEW World Championship. So obviously Ospreay is like the guy on the poster for Forbidden Door. Hopefully that was leading people to kind of think, well, all right, Ospreay get hurt, he'll probably fight at Forbidden Door and take some time off. That's now in doubt. So wonder where things go there. I hope everything's okay and that Ospreay isn't like super seriously hurt and he can be back in time to build a really good story and get back in the title picture. Speaking of injuries, one story that stood out to me yesterday I was reading was about Seth Rollins. And Dave Meltzer, I believe it was again, shared that Seth Rollins' injury may be an angle. That the idea would be at SummerSlam for Seth Rollins to come back to cash in the title during the Gunther CM Punk match and win the WWE Championship, again stealing the title away from CM Punk. And one, Meltzer's posting of saying of that and it spread on social media, there are the fans that are like, oh, Meltzer has a job. His job is to get the news and to share that. There's a possibility that this isn't real. And so we'll see how it works. And then, you know, Meltzer may be wrong or he may be right. But from what I'm reading is that the people even backstage weren't told if it was a fake or not. They were handling it as if it was a legitimate injury. Producers, talent, and other staff are being told the injury is legitimate, and there's reportedly internal skepticism about its severity, with some believing they are being worked. One producer even described the situation as being Machiavellian, which means very deceptive, very everything's not as it is. And so there were people that called it from the beginning that Seth Rollins was faking this injury. It looked really real, to be completely honest, watching it. But it seemed too good to be true that he was actually injured. It seemed like it was part of the plan, at least from me. We'll have to see if Seth comes back at SummerSlam in a few weeks or what's going to happen now that Dave is kind of tip to tap. I wonder if WWE goes into like storyline reverse mode to try and be like, no, Seth is actually hurt. Dave is wrong again type of thing. But I don't know. What do you guys think? Is Seth Rollins really hurt? Or is he faking it? Is it storyline? We'll have to see. We'll have to see. And then the last story that I want to talk about isn't really about the in-ring WWE product, more so about their corporate. This made the moves on Friday. TKO and WWE announced that there's going to be a change to the company, to WWE employees' pension program. It was revised. So long story short, prior were giving 4 weeks of severance for every year that they worked with the company. So if you worked there for 15 years, you got 15 months of pay in your severance package. If you worked there for 5 years, you would get five months worth of severance. They changed it now to the overarching TKO policy, which is 2 weeks for every year. So again, if you worked there for 15 years, instead of getting 15 months of severance, you're getting 7.5 months of severance. Instead of getting, 5 months at 5 years, you're getting 2.5 months. And so there's this change, and it sounds like the morale is low. It sounds like some people working in the company are disgusted, and even to the point that they fear that there's going to be another round of corporate layoffs in the company soon. And so this is what it reads to me. To me, from a business perspective, the severance package is still a pretty good package. Like 2 weeks for every year that you work with the company, like that's a pretty good severance package. The issue to me is that they used to pay more and now they're paying less, which tells me that WWE is not as in good financial health as they want to claim all the time on their pay-per-views, on their PLEs. They like to boast these big gates and these big, ticket prices, and they sold X amount of merch at X, Y, and Z, but they're not in as good as financial shape as maybe they lead us to believe on the TV. And the reason I say that is because they had to do large roster cuts where the main focus seemed to be people who made more money than their output determined them to make. And then, so it was contract and then money and then injury history that was the deciding factor on these roster cuts. They've already gone through like two sets of layoffs already since the merger with TKO. And now it seems there may be a third or fourth set of corporate layoffs. And see, this is what always happens with a merger. Is one from the main picture. See, I lived this when I worked for another company and we merged with a competitor, and they told all of the people of the competitors, all of their employees, nobody's going to lose their job. We're just going to assimilate the two companies together. We'll keep the two brands. There'll be different brand identities. There will be a merger. The systems will be collaborated, but outside of like an internal merger, nobody would really know a difference. Well, nowadays, I don't work for this company anymore, but the merger happened. The goal was like those that couldn't assimilate to the new strategic plan from the one company to merge to this new company's process, they'd be the first to get let go. And now that second company's identity doesn't even exist anymore. They've transitioned all of the stores to the one main company's name. So the merger is completed and they essentially just ate the identity of the second company. This is what happens in mergers. And so WWE is going to be the company, it seems, where TKO is going to want to eat the identity of WWE, and you see it in the in-ring product, you see it on the on-TV product, you see it in every aspect of the corporate world, you see it with the way that the roster cuts hit, you see it with the way that there's just this absolute intentional focus on sponsorship and making money rather than creating good WWE products. And so to tie this episode back together, This is the de-evolution of WWE. If they've now just become another corporate, you know, a corporate entity where the main focus is money and not customer experience. The main focus is return on investment, year over year growth, and not consumer demands or consumer wants. And I sit here and I wonder if when the merger happened, when TKO was formed and WWE and UFC and all of them merged together to form TKO, if this was discussed, if this was the plan, or if WWE, in an attempt to try and I don't know the right phrase. In an attempt to try and get bigger than what they were. Because let's just be honest. WWE, its market share shrunk. AEW stepped in and took a big piece of its market share. And so in an attempt to gain that market share back, they created this merger with TKO. And they really weren't prepared for what TKO was planning on doing. Because now you have WWE wrestlers seemingly promoting the UFC fights, but yet we don't see any UFC performers showcasing WWE events. So it seems like the focus is UFC, the focus is TKO, because that's the big money maker. They're not losing money, and it seems like WWE is the place where the cuts have to happen. So I wonder if WWE went in over their head. The Netflix numbers for international numbers have come out for PLEs, because remember, you can't watch PLEs in the United States on Netflix, but the Netflix numbers have, more people internationally watched Royal Rumble than they did WrestleMania on Netflix. In fact, I think WrestleMania was like night one and night two broadcasts were like fifth and sixth most watched internationally. I'm sure that's not what Netflix wants to see out of WWE's biggest show. And even then, Royal Rumble only got like 3 million viewers. So I don't know if the overall direction of WWE is as positive as these people want to say it is. And can I say it's because they've become this corporate entity is why the company is fucking awful now. And so, I don't know. I'll end it there. Let me know what you guys think. Can WWE get out of this rut, or are they stuck? Have they made their bed and have to live with the consequences? Let me know what you guys think. I'm Junkyard James. We'll see you again next Thursday on the live stream. So we're moving closer into Forbidden Door. We're moving closer into All In. We'll break it down, me and Cody Marinara, like we always do. And make sure you like, comment, share, and subscribe. If you're listening to the audio form of this, leave a five-star review. Hit that subscribe button and share it with your friends. Let everybody know we're the best damn podcast in the game. I'm Junkyard James. Until next time, y'all, we'll see you next week. Beyond.